Welcome to the Off Leash Podcast with Dr. Pete. I'm Dr. Pete, and we're glad you've joined us for today's show. Remember, we're not here to say what you want us to say, but we're here to be an advocate for your pet.
That's right, and today we have zero special guests, just Pete and I.
Yep.
So.
We're doing it alone.
So we're going to jump right into it. Well, is there anything that's been going on with you lately?
Not really. I mean, I just got back from a continuing ed event, and I went to a couple of sessions on this. You know, and my partner was down there too, Dr. Van Ryswyk. He's been with us for a long time, and we talked a little bit about, you know, kind of a lot of refresher stuff. You go in and you listen to something, and there's some things are reaffirmed. You know, how you're doing things are reaffirmed, and they were talking a little bit about. Some of these dogs have skin infections, you know, they have allergies, and then they have subsequent skin infections because they have the allergies. Or maybe they're getting staph infections just because they have, let's say they're hypothyroid, or maybe they're even Cushingoid, which is an adrenal disorder. Hypothyroid is obviously a thyroid disorder. But nonetheless, they have these staph infections, and in the past, we've always just kind of put them on antibiotics. But, you know, they kind of stress the importance of using topicals,
yeah.
Shampoos and rinses. And that sort of stuff. And we probably don't use enough of that.
I have a question for you about shampoos. Maybe we should save it for a segment, but...
Oh, sorry.
Every time I use a dog shampoo on my dog, I feel like it makes their skin super flaky and irritated and itchy. So I went to a groomer, and she said that Dawn dish soap works really well for dogs.
Yeah, I don't use Dawn. You know, the thing
Why
I don't
not?
Like about it, it takes all the oils off. And sometimes the body, you know, the skin... It's going to be healthy if it has more oils on it. Now, I think there's a reason to get some stuff off, but I don't use Dawn. You know, we're more likely to use a chlorhexidine shampoo, and we talk about the contact time. So you lather them up. Typically in the shower, we wash our hair, and we leave it on for about 15 or 20 seconds, and we wash it off. But we're not trying to really treat any specific condition. However, with dogs, we're trying to do this thing. We're going to go try to minimize the number of yeast on the skin, number of bacteria in the skin. So we put that all on and get it lathered in real good. And then we leave it on for 3 minutes. It's called contact time. And you got to make sure you're just not putting the shampoo into the water and then putting the water on the dog. You have to have the shampoo itself. Most of these chlorhexidines either come in 2%, sometimes 4%. I've even seen them 3.5%. But no, it's not all that important. But obviously, the stronger it is, the more likely it is to be effective. But you just leave it on for, 3 to 5 minutes.
Right.
We used to joke about it, one Justin Bieber song. Not that we like the Biebs or anything, but we joke about it. One Justin Bieber song, you leave it on. One
I don't
Justin
even
Bieber
think you
song.
Could name a Justin Bieber
I can't
song.
I can't name a Justin Bieber song or any other of that generation. Nonetheless, you leave it on for 3 to 5 minutes, and then you repeat it every, 4, 5, 6 days.
Yeah.
And sometimes sometimes you're not risking that chance of getting MRSA-resistant bugs because you're using an antiseptic-type shampoo to get these things off. And then you let the dog kind of heal themselves. And you get, like there'll be sebaceous oils out on the skin, and what you're going to do is you're going to wash all the sebaceous oils off probably with these shampoos. And when they do, the bacteria kind of go with them. Now, just because you got everything, and people even tell you the dog smelled better, then they'll tell you 3 days later the dog smelled bad again, mostly because there's a lot of that bacteria were in the hair follicles. And then when the sebum came up out of the hair follicle, it brought the bacteria and the stink with it.
Right.
So that's I think that's probably something that people ought to think a little more about. I mean, listen, a lot of it has to do with what their situation is. Do they have a bathtub? Do they have any place where they can actually take their pet and, bathe them easily without making the whole place a big mess?
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times they don't. You know, they're bent over and they're in the shower and they're trying to get all this done. And you got to be worried about, when you get these shampoos with these detergents and stuff in them, that you got to be worried you don't get that in the eyeball. I think that you did that once with our dog, Sam. Remember?
I did.
Gave him a bath. He got a corneal ulcer. So you got to be pretty careful about that.
And Sam never sat still for a bath.
No, that's right. But
he would lick the bubbles.
The thing to have done with him would have been put a little petroleum jelly in his eye before we did it.
Do you think that petroleum jelly is something that every dog owner should own when they're giving their dog a bath?
I think if it's an idiot and you're worried about getting shampoo in the eye.
So any of my dogs.
Yeah, any of your dogs would probably need to have that. But just make sure you get them rinsed out and make sure you're not working right around the, sometimes they got some dandruff up around, the top of their head and stuff, and people are kind of, you know, they can be reckless with it. So we don't want to get,
I don't give very many dogs a bath. I mean, my dogs don't get baths very often because they're labs.
Yep. And I'm not a big advocate to give a dog a bath every week, unless you have a medical condition. Then you like to go ahead and bathe them and, mm-hmm. and keep them clean and stuff. Now, if they go out and roll in something dead, which a lot of them do, mm-hmm. I have no, that's always a nice thing about cats. They don't. But they'll go out and roll in something dead, and then they'll come in and it's like, oh my gosh, what in the hell just happened here?
Bosco,
that's right. And Bosco, he's only got 3 or 4 neurons, so I mean, we kind of expect him out of him to do stupid stuff. We talked, wife talked about taking him to obedience school, and I said, don't do that. She said, well, don't you want him obedient? I said, no, I just, you know, school, usually you get out after you graduate, and he's going to die of old age there. And we talked about that he would probably die of old age at obedience school.
Bosco is a Boykin Spaniel.
Yep. He's the dog of, I didn't tell you this story. He's the dog of South Carolina. So yeah. I went for training for, I went to Purdue this year for training for dermatology cases, you know, that when they're trying to clear dermatology mm-hmm. drugs. So they wanted to have us to where we were accomplished at calling this and that. Anyway, the guy down there's Dr. Robinson. He's from South Carolina. So we spent 3 days together, and we had a good time. And at the end of the whole thing, I said, you know, I worried a little bit about you because you were from South Carolina. I said, why'd you be worried about that? I mean, there's a lot of nice people in South Carolina. I said, but you all made, you all made the Boykin Spaniel your state dog.
Yeah.
And I thought if that dog represented the people of South Carolina, I said.
They'd be in trouble.
They'd be in trouble. That's what I said. And
I love this Boykin Spaniels. They're so sweet, but they're so dumb.
Well, he's not dumb. I mean, if you got something in your hand to eat,
he's very smart. Yeah, I shouldn't say dumb. Say. They're very selective listeners.
Yep.
They listen when it's convenient for them.
Yep. So anyway.
Bosco's an interesting dog.
And you really don't want to use medicated shampoos on dogs who really don't have conditions. You want to reserve that. In fact, you just want to use shampoos that usually are soap free. So I'm not a big fan of Dawn dish soap. So I'll nix the Dawn dish soap thing. You know, if a dog rolled in grease or something like that, or oil, or got oil on them, or something happened, yeah, go ahead, do it. And every once in a while, somebody puts a flea and tick thing on a dog, and they'd like to wash it off because they don't like the way, you know, they put it on, and they maybe went and read something about it or something. They want to get it off. So yeah, use Dawn. It's fine.
That's fair.
It's what they used to wash ducks off with when they have oil spills. I think.
I figured if it's good enough for the ducks, then it's good enough for my dogs.
No.
I'm still gonna use it.
You don't want to do it. No. And that has a lot of detergent in. So really, your chances of getting a corneal ulcer are really quite high when you do that.
Well.
So I'd prefer you didn't.
Okay.
And then they make rinses that you can use also at the same time. And quite frankly, they use sprays. You know, we sometimes forget about that. The sprays, we have a steroid spray called Genesis Spray. I love that stuff.
What does it do?
It's a steroid. So you, if you have a pink spot on your dog, you know, like in the axillary area, like underneath the arms or something like that, in the groin, you can spray it with that. You might want to wash it and then spray it with that. And then that has it's a fairly strong steroid called trimacinolone. And you put that on and spray it. I've even sprayed it in dogs' ears when they've had inflamed ears but not infected ears.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it for that. I mean, don't use it unless you get your veterinarian's okay with that.
Right.
Yep. He or she will tell you what you can do and what you can't do. And that's another thing that probably people need to learn is that you don't do something, then call somebody and ask them about it afterwards.
No.
Yeah. I just took 6 sleeping pills. What do you think? Bad idea. Probably ought to go to the hospital and have your stomach pumped.
Jeez. All right.
Well, I mean, that's a ridiculous comparison, but I get that all the time where people said, yeah, I gave my dog an aspirin. Okay, well, they probably won't do any.
Isn't ibuprofen the bad one for dogs?
No, ibuprofen, Aleve, they're all bad. So the only thing that really works on dogs is things for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something you got in your cabinet, and that's the thing we have a problem with, is if we gave my dog an aspirin. I said, well, you know, probably I'm going to kill him, but, you know, I would certainly not do it again 2 days in a row. And so how big is your dog? 7 pounds. It's like, oh, well, you need something then. You need actually charcoal.
Activated charcoal, I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Because I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I had a friend that I patched you in on a call.
Yep.
And his dog ate an entire bottle of ibuprofen.
Yep. And that can be the end of them if you don't get it taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a German short-haired pointer.
And that's the other thing you don't want to do. When it dawns on you something could really be wrong here, you don't say, well, let's see what happens.
So what do? You go outside with the activated charcoal.
Yep. And it's like a black slurry of stuff, and you put it down their stomach. If
and it just induces vomiting?
Yeah, well, no, it does not induce vomiting. It sort of sucks up all the bad stuff.
Oh.
So if you want to induce vomiting, then you should go to your veterinarian's office and get something that will induce vomiting. And then once they vomit.
Is there any household items that induce vomiting?
Hydrogen peroxide, but that's kind of iffy one way or the other. People have used salt and mustard before.
Mustard.
Yeah. But they make some stuff, apomorphine and a few things like that that work pretty good, yeah.
Because dogs can induce vomiting if they eat enough grass.
Yeah, they can. I mean, I don't know that's the way you want to treat it, whether you want to say, let's go eat some grass and see what happens, but.
No, yeah, I don't think the dog would.
The kind in your ditch, not the kind in your bedroom in the lower drawer, anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Anyway.
You've had some dogs eat that kind of grass the time. Yep. Nothing is funnier to me when I worked at your clinic than a dog that came in that ate weed.
Well, the not funny part was going up and explaining to the people, we were pretty sure we could smell what this dog smelled like and we could see what this dog looked like. And in fact, the dog just stoned out of his mind. And then, do you have children? That's the part of the conversation. Do you have children? Yeah, we got children. I got a 13-year-old daughter.
Well, that's
so you may want to go ahead and have a little heart-to-heart. I'm not going to say that your daughter was responsible for that, but if it wasn't the two of you, then it. And I don't think the dog went out in the street corner and bought a bag of it. So nice. I think that's. I just looked at your dog. I didn't see a money clip or a credit card. So I'm pretty sure that somebody in the house has his stuff around.
Yeah, most definitely.
And they're not happy about that. Well, it's not my kid. My kid's on the honor roll now. Good. So I'm glad your kid's on the honor roll. And apparently she's a good test taker when she's stoned. So that's great.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, let's get into Canine Chronicles, news in the dog world or dog food world. You got anything for me?
No, not in the dog food world, I don't think. They have a few recalls here and there every once in a while. They just got done having the AFCO meeting, the Association for Feed Control Officers. I don't think much came out of that. We thought maybe something was going to come out of that, but it didn't. And so we're still doing what we're doing. We're all going to have to, all of us in the dog food business, are going to have to change our labels in about 5 years or 6 years.
To make it more.
Yeah, they're going to change the way that you see the carbohydrates and the fats. And
I think it's confusing for people to flip over because they just have minimums and maximums. Yep. And it's kind of.
Yep. You have to have a degree to know how to. And I have a degree and I still can't read everything.
Yeah.
I still can't read everything on a dog.
Nobody really understands it. I think that if they do switch it, it's going to make it a lot easier for pet owners to flip over a bag and actually be able to read the label more effectively.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem people have is when they. I got the lowest fat dog food I can find. And what is it? And it's like, it's this canned food with a German Shepherd on it. And I said, what's the fat content? And they're like, 5%. That's really low. Well, it's 80% water, so it's actually 25% fat. So 80% water, 20% dry matter, the dry matter, 20% of it's fat because it was 5% before.
Right.
It'll even say on there, most people haven't even got the stones to call it water. They call it moisture.
Moisture.
There's moisture in there. So
yeah.
It's moisturing out today. Yep. Oh, you mean it's raining out? Rain and water? Yeah. Moisturing.
Moisturing.
It's moisturing, yeah.
I wonder why they do that.
I know. I'm going to go when we get done here. I'm going to get some moisture and satisfy. I ate something salty for lunch. So I'm going to have to go get some moisture. It's stupid.
Yep. They should just call it water.
They should call it water.
It makes it a lot more effective and easy for the client. Yep.
Well, and there's a lot of water in some of the ingredients. Chicken and.
Well, chicken's kind of like watermelon, right? Once you cook it down, it's.
Well, it's not like a watermelon.
It's just the analogy. Yeah. It's just like it holds a lot of water.
There's a lot of water. It's about 70% water.
And then when you cook it down, there's not much.
Yeah. Well, all you have to do is take it home and put it in the oven for about 4 or 5 hours, and then weigh it after you take it out, and you'll see how much was moisture.
I can agree with that. Well, let's go into some rock and roll history. What do you say?
Rock and roll history. Well, let's see. We've talked about everybody in Battle Creek, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about, well, we haven't really talked about, you've heard of Alice Cooper.
I have.
Yeah. So we're not really going to talk about Alice Cooper, but the guy who wrote the songs for him was a guy by the name of Dick Frost. Dick Wagner and the Frost. They were from Flint. They're actually...
Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, yeah. And they really actually became, when they broke up, some components of it were, were absorbed sometimes by Grand Funk Railroad. And okay. Grand Funk Railroad was up in that area too. But anyway, Dick Wagner wrote all the songs for Alice Cooper. And he had his own albums and stuff. And they were very good, but he was one of those guys who was a pretty good composer, a damn good musician. He had a song called Mystery Man that was fun.
What was your favorite Alice Cooper song?
School's Out.
School's Out Forever. Why is that your favorite?
I don't know. I just like it. That's what I'm thinking. It's probably how I felt when June 10th came around every year, School's Out Forever.
Yeah.
And, of course, I was in college by then, so... And I was in vet school, so we went to school during the summer. So it had meaning when I was an undergrad, but it had very little meaning when I got to vet school because there was no schools out. We went to school. Usually during finals week, you don't have to go to school. We had to go to school during finals week and then take our finals in the evening or something. So,
yeah
kind of crazy. But anyway, Dick Wagner and the Frost, and they had a big song called Mystery Man. I don't know if you can pull that up, but... Maybe some other time we can. But anyway, Dick Wagner, he's deceased now, and he had a very colorful career, Dick Wagner and the Frost, but he did a lot of stuff, and he was kind of a local hero around here. And he did a lot of collaboration with Alice Cooper. And Alice Cooper's kind of a wild-looking guy, but apparently in real life he's fairly normal, just about like everybody else.
Yeah.
So.
What was the song?
Mystery Man? Man. What do you got there?
I'm looking it up as we speak.
Yeah.
When was the song written?
Oh, probably 1968, 67.
And it's by Alice Cooper?
No. Dick Wagner and the Frost.
There we go.
Let's see what you got. Yeah.
This song?
This is probably the intro to it. Yeah. Yeah, this is it. Yeah. I haven't heard of this in a long time. You can play it loud. It's meant to be played loud. Anyway, they were from they were a good group, and they stuck together for a long time. They kind of went around and played junior colleges and bars and those sorts of things, colleges. And I don't know if they ever, when he died, I think he was in Arizona. Yep, here we go. Yep. This is a different recording than I've heard, but anyway.
Is it?
Yeah. Fun song, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, good.
I feel like you know an uncanny amount of rock and roll history.
Yeah, and I kind of feel bad about it because as a veterinarian, I should be storing better stuff in there, not this stuff, Mystery Man.
But this is fun stuff. Yeah. This is, I don't know. I learn a lot.
This has a big, long intro, which is probably the wrong song to.
It's a good song.
Anyway, is that who's doing it right there?
Yeah, or? Dick Wagner.
Yep.
Well, I have the Dick Wagner and the Frost underneath. I clicked the wrong one,
oh,
but.
You did.
I like it.
Okay. Yeah, Dick Wagner's was a little better than this. Anyway, it's fun. But local guy.
Local
guy. And there was actually a lot of musicians from up in that Flint area. Like I said, Grand Funk, and actually they called themselves Grand Trunk Railroad to begin with. And then the Grand Trunk says you can't call yourself Grand Trunk.
You know who I just figured out was from Michigan?
Who's that?
Who is the guy from Smokey and the Bandit? The main guy.
Burt Reynolds?
Burt Reynolds. He's from Lansing.
Yeah, he was born there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's really from there. He was born there.
He was born in Lansing.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Malcolm X was born in Lansing. So there's a lot of people. Yeah, there's a lot of people born in Lansing.
There's a lot of famous people from Michigan.
Yep.
Got to represent. All right. Getting into our main segment, information and peace of mind. Today, I wanted to bring up a topic and get your thoughts and opinions on it.
Well, you know, I thought maybe today we'd talk about lumps and bumps. You know, clients come in all the time to have their dogs vaccinated, and they'll go, you know, what about this lump? What about this lump? What about that lump? And usually so we're always trying to make sure we're pretty proactive about figuring out what it is. So we take your dog back, we do what's called a fine needle aspirate, FNA. So we stick a needle, usually about a 20-gauge needle, into this tumor, and then you suck and pull material out of the middle of that tumor, then put it on a slide, stain it, see if it has any malignant properties.
Right.
So I think that's the thing that clients need to do. They're concerned about those. And you, like a Labrador Retrievers, the problem with labs is they all get
lipomas. They do get a lot of fatty tumors.
Yeah, they get a lot of fatty tumors. And, you know, and
well, Emlyn down in Florida, one of our clients stopped in with her dog.
Sure.
Great looking dog for 10 years old, especially for a lab.
Yep.
But one fatty tumor.
Yep.
And she was asking about if she should get it removed or not.
You know, you leave them alone. You know, I've had some get really, really big, you know, where the veterinarian said, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Maybe we should have done it. And that's a problem. I mean, I took one off one time. I think it was like 14 pounds. Those need to be taken off. But if they don't get any bigger than a big marble or something like that, just leave them alone. The only ones that ever get to be real problematic is every once in a while you'll get one in a muscle. In other words, you'll get one in your biceps in between the muscle layers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are actually kind of painful because lots of times within those muscles are blood vessels and nerves. And then you've got this, fatty tumor that kind of grew there. Or sometimes it's not a fatty tumor. So what we're looking at is we're looking for, you know, sarcomas, breast cancer, mast cell tumors. So we're looking at the stuff that needs to be taken off. And when we find stuff that needs to be taken off, then we, you know, paddle our rear end back up to the exam room and say, okay, here's what this is. This is a mast cell tumor. We need to take this off. We don't know or we don't see any other ones. This could be the only mast cell tumor you have, but it needs to come off before it metastasizes elsewhere. And so then we usually schedule them usually try to do it less than a week and get that thing off and be done with it and hope that nothing else pops up in the meantime.
Right.
But I certainly have dogs that come in that, you know, they may have some mast cell tumors centrally and they're casting them out into the skin. And so we see mast cell tumors, I won't say frequently, but we see them more than we'd like to see them. Then we got the tumors that are inside, you know, which are like... splenic tumors and stuff, and we have
what are they?
Spleen in the spleen. The spleen's a thing about this long that looks like a tongue, and we see those, and we usually take the whole spleen out when we take those. Every once in a while, I see a tumor in the liver, and if it's just one tumor in the liver, sometimes we'll take those out.
And you can see all this through X-rays.
Well, you can see it through usually sometimes X-rays, sometimes ultrasounds. Usually, sort of a combination of both. In fact, you know. You know, it's like the yellow pages, let your fingers do the walking. You know, so sometimes you just palpate them. Yes, people don't use the yellow pages anymore, but nonetheless, you palpate a dog and see if you can feel anything in the abdomen. You're like, ooh, this feels funny. You know, sometimes you got to do that. You got to use your hands to look for stuff. Every once in a while, you'll feel a bladder stone or a splenic tumor.
Really?
Yeah, so you got to go ahead and start looking for that stuff. And it is nice if you have ultrasound now, you can do... ultrasound guided biopsies, you know, with a needle, the long needle and stuff. Although they're not as accurate as, you know, getting a big piece out of there. So,
right.
But I think that's the thing. And we're talking about this information, peace of mind. So I go up and tell you, listen, you got a mast cell tumor, you know, it's about the size of a, you know, whatever, a small handball or something like that. We need to take that off. And hopefully it's in a place where it comes off easily and you can get the skin back together when you're done because you're supposed to take big margins around here.
Right.
So lots of times don't think the veterinarian has drunk or anything when he did this or she did this because you're expecting to see an incision this long and you get one that's this long. That's a good veterinarian who makes an incision that long on a mast cell tumor. It means they got everything around it.
And for all the people listening versus seeing, how long is that?
I don't know. It's... 5-6 inches, something like that.
So don't be alarmed.
Yeah, it usually goes a couple centimeters outside where the tumor starts and stops because mast cell tumors tend to have little granules of themselves cast out in tissue that would maybe normally look normal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the peace of mind part. Now you know, well, this is bad news. My dog's got cancer, but the good news is we found it and the doctor's going to take it off. So there's the good news, the bad news, the information and peace of mind. And you don't get that the other way around. Maybe you do if you're dyslexic, but normally it's information first, peace of mind second.
Right.
And that's the way you should be doing this.
Choosing what you do with the information to get that peace of mind. Yep.
So then people pick their dog up, you know, a week later, 5 days later, and they're glad they did it. And they, No, they, no. I mean, of course, with older dogs, this is just, you know, we're going to go ahead and take care of what we can take care of. It'll, there'll be something next. It's like Emma, you know, I told Dr. Anna Marie, her dog had copper cirrhosis, and we kind of took care of that. And she says, well, that's great. And I said, yeah, and you should be good until something else comes along, because mm-hmm. your dog's 12 years old. So until something else comes along.
Right. We need to have her on the podcast.
Yeah, we should have her on someday. She's very good. She's
a very smart lady.
Yep, yep.
Well, cool. Well, are you ready to wrap up with our last segment?
Sure. What's our last segment today?
Label lies.
Oh, label lies.
I actually picked a treat that I feed quite regularly to my dogs. So if you deem it as a good treat at the end, I'll tell everyone what it is. All right. This is a soft treat that I use for training. The first ingredient is peanut butter.
It's fine. Dogs love peanut butter. And you know, for some reason, other people sometimes tend to be allergic to peanut butter, but dogs, yeah. I don't think I run into hard any dogs who are allergic to peanut butter.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I've heard before that there are some peanut butters out there that have
xylitol. Yeah, you can't have that. No.
So,
No.
I've learned that there's certain peanut butters that are good and peanut butters that are bad for dogs.
Sure, sure.
So the first ingredient, peanut butter, rice.
It's fine.
Water for processing.
It's fine.
Oats.
Yep.
Potatoes.
Yep.
Cane sugar.
Yep.
Vegetable glycerin.
Sure.
Malted barley.
Sure.
Potato protein.
Yep, fine.
Salt.
It's fine. I mean, we all like stuff that'd be salty. You know, and even our dogs, even our cardiac dogs, we don't really worry that much about salt.
Really?
You know, with people, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
You can't go out and have a prime rib and just salt the snot out of it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We go to basketball games every once in a while. We stop at a place called Arts and have pizza, and I mean,
Art's pizza is good.
Yeah, yeah, and your fingers are swollen by the time you leave the place.
It's very salty pizza.
Very salty, yep. So not good for us, but dogs don't tend to have that problem with, you know, diffuse swelling from excessive salt.
And dried cultured whey product.
Yeah, now whey is different. So if you have a dog with milk allergies, that's probably not what I would be doing. So we say beef, milk, and wheat, and whey is another word for milk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got to look at everything. You got to look at everything in the front to the back, and then people can go, "Well, it's at the end of the line. It's probably not a big deal." Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. But if you're really allergic to milk, it is in fact whey is milk protein. So they could have put milk way up in front. Not whey, W-H-E-Y, but whey, W-E-Y, way up in front, and you said there was a lot of milk in there. Well, if it was milk, it was a lot of moisture in there. But that whey protein is, that's the protein. And that's what dogs are going to be allergic to. Almost always, they're going to be allergic to the protein fraction of something.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this maybe in one of the other podcasts, that if a dog, if somebody says, well, my dog's allergic to chicken and there's chicken fat in the dog food, not a big deal. If there's no protein in the chicken fat, you're okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine, yeah.
Exactly. Citric acid for freshness.
That's fine.
Cherries.
Fine.
Natural flavor.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Vinegar.
It's fine.
Turmeric spice.
That's fine.
Vitamin E supplement.
That's fine.
Zinc protonate.
That's fine.
Mixed tocopherols.
Sure.
For freshness. And that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, honestly, Molly, between you and I, that's an awful lot of stuff to have in a... And then they're putting cherries in there, and people are like, oh, cherries would be good for you.
I don't know why it's cherries, because the ingredients it says on the front is peanut butter and oats recipe.
Which is what it is, you know, and that's what it, so that's overwhelming what it is. And they put all this, well, I've heard good things about turmeric. Well, there's probably enough turmeric in there to, you know, it's
that's
a free
me.
Package. Yeah.
That's totally me.
Yeah.
I am that person.
Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't be that person, because.
You were the one that told me. When I first got a dog and I read on the back of the bag, I'm like, there's blueberries in this diet. And you're like, at the very end.
Yeah, and I said, if you want blueberries, go get blueberries and throw them in your dog's food.
And you said, I think you said to me, there's probably one blueberry in that bag.
Yeah, you know, it's like you go home and tell your wife, yeah, I had a prime rib and I had some mixed vegetables. And it's like, oh, I'm glad you have vegetables. You know, one lima bean and one little piece of carrot. Oh, those are vegetables.
Yeah, they are technically. Yeah.
If they have children, they're really vegetables. There's more than just one. So, but, you know,
So this is not a great treat.
It's all right. It's got whey in it. So if you're allergic to milk, this is not what I would give.
I know.
So if your dog got ear infections when you ate these things.
I don't have a dog right now that has ear infections.
Good for you. We've not really talked that much about ear infections, have we? We'll do that someday.
We will.
Yep.
Well, we talked about it with Storm yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. Okay. That's right.
But yeah, ear infections are definitely a problem. I don't have any dogs right now with ear infections.
Nope. We don't either. But we're not feeding them anything that we think would propagate that.
For anybody that doesn't know, I have a constant rotation of dogs at my house because I train and sell hunting labs part-time.
And your dogs are like 7 or 8 months old, and they may not have developed their food allergies yet, but they could develop their food allergies yet.
When's like the latest state that you'd see a food allergy?
Well, you could see it any time, but typically once they get to be 15 months of age or older, I'm kind of thinking, well, if you haven't got it yet, you're probably not going to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you grow up your whole life, and all of a sudden at 47, you get a big growth of pimples all over you. I mean, it's like, really? You should have had those when you were like 13 years old when everybody else had them.
Yeah.
So can it happen? I guess it can. Will it happen? Probably not.
Right.
And I think that's what you got to look at. Probably not. So if you get through the first 14, 15 months of age and you haven't had ear infections, and as long as you don't change what you're eating, there's a good chance you won't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you ever gone to, when we took you to school, when you were in kindergarten, they always said, okay, you can't bring this to school. You can't bring that to school because we got two kids in this class that are allergic to both those things.
Okay.
And some pediatrician had already figured that out. So that's what you have to know that. And when a dog gets to be 2 years of age and you're taking him in the veterinarian and say, your dog have food allergies? Well, I don't know. If you had them, the veterinarian should have probably already figured it out. And I think that's the thing. And you have to keep in your mind a good history. And I'm not sure you read to the end of the bag treat to know that there was whey in there. So if your dog had gotten an ear infection, you'd have thought whatever your dog was eating for dog food was causing ear infection. No. It's the whey.
I know. Protein. I felt so bad. It was probably 6 months ago. Ben brought his dog into the office, and I think I gave Duke a Cheez-It. And then instantly the next day, Ben was like, did you give my dog something?
Yep.
It was like almost instant.
Okay, well.
So he has ear infections really bad. He actually gets staph.
Yeah. Well, he gets whatever he gets.
Yeah.
So, and that's the nice thing. Well, it's not the nice thing. It's the bad thing about ear infections. You could have yeast. You could have staph. You could have Pseudomonas. You could have Proteus.
But I just didn't think that that one little Cheez-It would make a difference.
Yep.
Crazy.
Well, it's like poison ivy. And we tell people that. Are you allergic to poison? Well, I'm really allergic to poison ivy. So you must have to sleep on a 55-gallon bale of stuff to break out. Hell no, I don't have to sleep on a 55-pound bale of that stuff.
Yeah.
No. All I have to do is go up and look at it on a tree and I get it. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so you really are allergic to it. So if you're allergic to poison ivy, in fact, lots of people, they'll have a campfire or something. It's like, what's that piece of branch material on that wood you're burning? They want to know. They want to make sure it's not poison ivy and it's not green and there's oil in there.
Because
they don't want to sniff that smoke and end up in the hospital because that's where you'll end up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not great.
Nope.
Well, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, why don't we get some outro music. Outro music.
Yeah, of course.
Outro music. Hey, there you go. Sure appreciate you guys listening along with us today and hoping to be able to share some information that will help you with your animals as much as they love you. Hey, don't forget, we always treat the treatable and prevent the preventable. We'll catch you on our next podcast. Thanks, bye.
Thanks. I'm going to go home and wash my dog with Dawn dish soap.
Have at her.